This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative.
Hi, friends. This is Tim McKenna, and this is another episode of Signal 337. Today is November 8th, and it is an unseasonably warm day here in South Central Pennsylvania. And I've totally taken advantage of this whole weekend, because it's been so warm, and I've been able to take my kiddo out and my dog out for a hike. I was able to get her groomed and all these things, and definitely just got a lot of stuff done so far this weekend. And why am I kind of like time stamping this with this particular, you know, time and day, year with everything? Well, I think it's important to talk a little bit about, you know, this certain time and place that we are in our history. And this dovetails into the topic at hand around jobs. So as many of you probably know, our political climate in the United States is on the verge of massive changes, at least with people in office. Still a lot of work to be done to dismantle systemic racism and generally fix a lot of broken things that we've had in our society for a very long time. So hopeful, yet not delusional. And one of the things that is on the forefront of a lot of people's minds right now is their job safety, their job security. How are they going to get paid? The pandemic has royally fucked things up. In and of its own right, take out the total mishandling of the pandemic. But just in its own right, the pandemic, coronavirus, has really fucked things up. And hopefully we will be wiser about this in the future. But I think for a lot of people, they're starting to understand the interconnectedness that we have in our society and our culture and our professional lives. So a lot of companies right now are trying to figure out how to keep their doors open, how to retain customers, how to, you know, be able to pay their employees. And there is a lot of concern. There is a lot of fear. And you get to those more like white-collar jobs, or looking in the tech industry, you know, they're still having some of the same issues as well. They may be in a little bit better of a position to be able to pivot comparatively to like smaller businesses that are more brick and mortar in a lot of respects, but the issues are still the same. Global workforce, people finding jobs, people losing their jobs, this is something that has just been exacerbated by the pandemic. And it's interesting that while a lot of companies are able to shift their models and their revenue, you know, streams, and being able to basically react to the pandemic, what I have been finding in my own experience and my own interactions with people is that people's approaches to finding work hasn't really changed all that much. And again, I want to couch all of this in the fact that these are my observations, these are my interactions as a design professional living in a rural area. So your experience, your interactions may vary. I cannot talk to the experience of someone who's living in, you know, Spokane, Washington, or, you know, New York City, or, you know, anywhere else. But generally, looking at the design, the tech, and the business world here in my little corner of Pennsylvania, my little part here, it's been interesting to learn how different people have been responding to the changing business environment and what they're doing for themselves to be able to you know, react and change and grow. So this is not going to be an episode about the observations of businesses and how they can work. This is more of an observation and discussion about how people are reacting to it. And my critique on a lot of people's supposed professional outlook and approach to things that aren't really, I feel, are meeting the demands of today's workplace. So this is going to be a little bit about that, and it's also going to be a little bit about the things that I've done to help me in my career, because I think the time-honored or traditional mentalities about how to go about finding a job and moving up and the thought processes we have around that, I think they are not as valid anymore. So let me explain a little bit of the why behind this. Recently, I've had some friends and some colleagues reaching out to me, and they're talking about, you know, some of their work situation going on. I've had a few friends that have actually been let go from their jobs. I've had a few friends reach out to me in fear that their jobs are going to be made redundant. And I've also had a few friends reach out to me. They're just generally unhappy about the direction of their company or how their work is being less valued now, and they're looking to move on. And a lot of what I'm seeing is a very, very reactionary type of approach to looking at getting another job or moving around in their career, finding opportunities to move up. And I ask every one of them, like, well, what do you want to be doing? What is it that you would like to be doing? Where do you want to be recognized? What kind of work values are you looking for? Ultimately, like, what's your goal? And that's a hard question, you know, oddly, for some people to answer, is that, like, they're not really thinking about what makes them super happy and what is going to fulfill them. And I can understand that to an extent. But if you really don't have much of an idea of what you want to, you know, maybe pursue or get into or expand upon, like, then I really don't know how else to kind of help you in this regard. So I had a good friend of mine who recently, you know, lost his job. And he was looking to figure out his next steps. And I was talking with him. I was like, you know, so what is it that you're looking to do? Like, where do you want to get into? This, look at this as an opportunity to maybe position yourself for something that you've wanted to do for a long time. So I asked him this, and, you know, he didn't really have much of an idea. Maybe he wanted to pursue more management, but he also liked really being an individual contributor, and he didn't want to lose those skills. So I was like, okay, well, have you been looking at different companies? And this was what really shocked me was, no, he hasn't looked at anything. And for me, like, I don't understand that mentality. Now, I might be the outlier here. I'm constantly looking. I'm never not looking at different places. Whether I want to work for them or not, I've never not looked at places. Now, since I'm interested to see how other companies operate, what companies value. And especially as a design professional, I'm very particular about places that I might want to work at in the future, because if I don't know how they view design and strategy, I don't know if I really want to work for them. So that may seem like an odd statement for someone, especially someone who just got a new job. I'm always looking, and I'm always looking at, you know, what companies have to offer. Now, I think The thing to remember, though, is that you can always be looking, but I'm not actively pursuing anything. And I think that is a distinction that needs to be made. So I may be always looking at stuff. I may be looking at a job description. I may be looking at a company, but doesn't mean that I'm actively pursuing. There usually is some sort of switch that does happen where I move from passively looking at different opportunities to actively pursuing opportunities. So when I hear about people who are always on like passive mode or not even on passive mode, and they're not even looking at any company for anything, that to me strikes it as a little odd, because some of the myths or maybe just ancient history that I've heard from, you know, my parents and other older folks is that, you know, you stay at a company, you're there for the long term. You're there, you give the company everything, and they're going to reciprocate that back. And honestly, I mean, that sounds like some like 1950s, 1960s kind of mentality towards work. But I don't know if that really holds true anymore in any industry. In fact, I think there's a romantic notion in the advertising industry that a person will work at an ad agency, a design studio, and then they will move on to another place and bring their clients with them. I mean, you know, you saw that happen in Mad Men. So I don't think that this whole mentality of, you know, you spend 30 years at a company and you're going to get a great pension, that puts a lot of the onus on that company to be doing right by you as long as you're doing right by them. I don't think that that is still the same now. A lot of companies do try to provide a inclusive and fun and meaningful environment for you to work within because they do want you there for the long term. But people's priorities, people's ideas of work and everything have kind of shifted. And to think that you're at a place and you're never not looking at what other things are out there, I feel like that's doing you a disservice. As I was talking with my friend about this, he was asking me some advice about what he should do. And I shared with him some of my strategies, which was, regardless if you're, you know, unemployed now or if you're gainfully employed and you're happily employed, always be looking. Always be at least passively looking at things, because regardless of a pandemic, you know, your job security is a myth. You can be let go at any point in time. And putting the onus and the responsibility on the company and not taking it for yourself, I feel like is dangerous ground to be treading. So you need to take active responsibility for your own career pathing and your own job security. You have to constantly be looking. But the level of that looking and the intensity doesn't need to be like full bore on like panic mode, I need a new job. There's usually some triggers for me that switch me over into actively pursuing. So always be looking, and you need to get organized. Even when I'm not, you know, actively pursuing, if I'm just passively looking, I keep my resume up to date. I spend a couple hours a month just to make sure that my resume is up to date and I have content blocks of paragraphs of accomplishments or, you know, the value that I brought of a project to a company. I have these little content blocks that I use to build my cover letter with. And I absolutely agree that you need a well-written one-page cover letter. Why one page? That seems oddly restrictive. You need to have something powerful to make a first impression, at least down on paper. And that way you can have a much more in-depth, more meaningful discussion once you actually have the interview. So a well-written cover letter, and you need to tailor it to the industry, the job. You need to have it as something that is specific and unique to the place that you're applying. So what I have is a template. I have a template of a cover letter with a very short and sweet intro of who I am, why I would like to be considered for this role. And then I have my middle section where I have all my different content blocks of things that go to the value, the experience, a project that is meaningful and ties into what they're doing. And then I have this reusable kind of ending to everything that talks about, how to get in contact with me and how to review my portfolio and things like that. So I have a template-tized cover letter that, instead of having to rewrite all those different sections, I'm able to take those content blocks, make a version of it, read over it, make sure that it makes sense, tailor it just a little bit more, and that's what I use to send out. I don't have a one-size-fits-all cover letter, and I don't think that you really should have a one-size-fits-all cover letter. Now, for some of you, you may be thinking, well, duh, you shouldn't. But you'd be surprised how often I have seen kind of bland, cover every base cover letter that doesn't really show me that a candidate has really thought about what they're applying for, what the role is, and how they would be considered for it. So I have this templatized cover letter in a way that lets me easily build a cover letter, and then I tailor it on top of it a little bit more afterwards. So I said, you need to have that. You also need to have a version of your resume that you can do kind of the same thing. So if you are applying for a job as a design professional or a development specialist, and one of the things they really are harping about in the job description is about quality assurance and being able to do testing and things. Well, if you have that experience, you may want to put that into your resume somewhere they're more strategically placed so that it's easier to understand and gets through some of the keyword, filters and whatnot. But if you're applying for another role and the thing that they're looking for is a certain technology experience, you might want to switch out that QA thing and put in that technology thing. Again, you don't want to have a monolithic resume that is going to take up a lot of time. You don't want to put all of your story down on the resume. You want enough there that is valuable, that is actionable, that is scannable, and wants to beg the conversation with you, like wants to have the interview with you. So that's what your resume job is there for as well. And that whole thing I have templatized in a way that if I'm applying for a certain role, certain key skills or certain technologies, or even, certain certifications that I have, I am able to switch in and out. The key thing in this year is that you don't lie. You don't say that you have a certain skill or a certain experience with a technology or a certain certification if you truly don't. So I used to put on my resume, I used to have a separate page on my resume that listed all of the course completions that I had on LinkedIn Learning. And a lot of people may think that I'm an overachiever. I just like to learn, but I want to be more effective in my job. So I watch a lot of LinkedIn Learning and Team Treehouse and other certification stuff, other course completion stuff. So I had this dedicated page to that. It truly was one filled page. And at one point in time, I think I had listed 54 courses that I had completed on LinkedIn Learning. And initially, I thought, wow, you know, this just shows my dedication. This just shows how much that I know. And then it really didn't matter. Like, oh, cool. Your objective thinking about, like, hey, I'm really smart and I'm going to show it by listing all of this, that doesn't make a whole bunch of sense. Like, that, it seems to be like filler. And it also goes to show, like, are you really reading this description of this job? We don't need someone who has, you know, Selenium testing experience and you watched a video on this and you listed this here when the job is more for accessibility. Like, you need to make sure that you're selling yourself correctly. And pretty quickly, I got rid of that single dedicated page of all my education and skills and certifications. I pared that down to, here's where I went to school. Here is the professional credentials that I have. And if there is a particular experience or a course that I had completed that I feel really matches the job description that I have done, I'll add one or two of those if that makes sense. So again, tailoring your resume in a way that aligns with the job description. Because here's the other sad truth of it. A lot of these HR tools that are meant for recruiting and getting people's applications and resumes, you know, they're not just a fancy filter of sending it to an inbox and then everyone is being reviewed from an actual person's eyes. A lot of the times, these tools are actually filtering your resume and filtering your cover letter, and they're using keyword searches to make sure that you're someone that should get onto the next review process. So there's a bit of a gatekeeping that happens with this, and you need to make sure that your resume and your cover letter are aligned using some of the same language and some of the same phrases that get you through those filters. Now, that may sound like it opens it up for gamifying the system and being able just to get through those filters. You may have a lot of the experience. You may feel like you're the best fit for this role because of your knowledge. You just need to be able to create it in a way that's going to have you have the conversation, have an in-person conversation, whether it truly is in person or if you're doing a virtual call or something like that. So having the cover letter, having the resume, and always looking at different companies. And what's great about doing that, if you're just passively perusing, you get to learn about like what other companies' values are, and you get to understand how they view, you know, their people. So if they have a really good job description, something that was written well, and they list a lot of their, you know, their perks and their benefits and stuff like this, those are some really good indicators of whether or not you want to work with them. If what they're putting out there is attracting the best talent, and you should be able to see that pretty easily as you apply. Versus a, oh, hey, jobs page, here's the job description, no real mention of anything, or just like half-hearted attempts at mentioning, here's the benefits and stuff that we have. Wonderful. That seems more transactional. It's probably something you want to stay away from. So now again, could be just priorities, could be the level of maturity of their HR staff. It depends on a lot of things. So this is highly subjective of what I'm saying. But in my experience, that if a company has a really well-written jobs page, talking about their careers, talking about what they offer, and a really well-written job description, that goes to show, to me at least, that they do care more than just having warm bodies or butts in seats. So now, for another strategy that I use, because I've totally done this, is you should have a spreadsheet of the places that you're applying to. So mine I have is a Google sheet. I have, here's the name of the company. Here is the job title. Here's a link to the actual job description, or the place to apply. And here's the list, here's a column of all the locations. And then I have another couple columns of when I applied, what date I applied, and I have a column that links out to here's the resume that I used, here's the cover letter that I used. Because I keep everything inside of Google, I have multiple versions of my resume tailored to each of the jobs that I apply to. Multiple resumes, multiple cover letters. So it's important to keep it all straight. So I have the spreadsheet. And the other couple of columns at the end is when did I follow up and when I heard back from them and what the next steps were. So if it was a rejection, you know, put that in there. If it was a first interview, then a rejection, like those are the things. I keep a history of that in a Google Sheet for me. And that way, I don't apply for the same job twice or more than twice. I have done that. I've actually applied for a company. I applied for this job, I think, 4 times with inside of a month, thinking that they didn't get it, or did I really apply there? Did I just had it saved and not looked at it? So I needed something to keep me kind of like straight on everything. So having this Google Sheet helped. But I've definitely applied for a company before 4 times in a month because I didn't hear anything from them at all. I didn't know if it went through or anything. I didn't even get the standard robo email saying, hey, we've received your resume, your application, and we're going to be reviewing it in the next coming days or weeks. So I didn't even get that, so that's why I applied several times. And when I finally got a letter back, an email back that said, yeah, we're moving on with a different candidate, you can reapply for this role in 12 months, basically saying, hey, don't ever do that again. So I have this sheet that keeps it all on the straight and narrow for me. Another column I forgot to actually say was type of industry. You know, so if you're applying for design jobs in the healthcare industry, and you're also applying for stuff in the nonprofit, if you're applying for stuff in, you know, finance, you know, I think it's important to keep the industry listed as well. So those were some of the tactics and the strategies that I use. But I think it also goes into the fact that, you know, as I am always looking, I am trying to figure out a couple of things. One, I view working at a company as kind of like on a contract basis. Here's what I mean by that. I work full-time as a full-time employee, but I think about my time with this company. Are they holding up their end of the bargain? So we enter into an employment arrangement. I'm going to provide my services to you to help build your product, lead your team, create your strategies, and you're going to pay me X, Y, Z with benefits, all these different things. So we come into that arrangement. That's not hard to understand. I think everyone understands that that's, you know, you pay for goods and services, and that's pretty easy. But some of the things that keep me at a job or a place is not related to pay, not related to benefits. So those things are important, but I'm trying to think about how to word this. I could be working at a place that is paying me a lot of money, but if the environment sucks, if everyone hates their jobs, everyone hates life, if everyone is just there kind of clocking in and clocking out and not really giving a damn about the work output and not really kind of showing up mentally, I don't want to work there. Even though I might be getting paid very nicely, I think about my work quality, my work output, you know, the things that make me happy, and is this where I want to continue to grow? Am I going to grow in this environment? Is this something that is going to keep my skills sharp and fresh, or are they going to atrophy? And I think about that a lot when I'm in a place. And I use my time at a company and observe how a company operates, how they communicate with each other, how they communicate to their customers, how they foster communication inside the company. And I look at all of these different facets. And I think to myself, 6 months in, a year in, are we still in a good arrangement? Or should I start thinking about moving on? Now, that may seem incredibly like transactional and narrow and unfocused, but if we are having a relationship, you're paying me to do X, Y, and Z, you're not just paying me to, you know, push a cog around or push a button or throw some stuff on, you know, on the screen, pushing pixels. You're hiring me for my knowledge, my experience, and what I can bring to bring more value to you. That's one of the biggest reasons why I think anyone is looking to move up in their career is how much more value, where can they grow, things that they can bring to the company. There's more than just throwing stuff up on a screen and doing, you know, the bare minimum of everything. I look at my career and like, you know, in a place, 6 months, year, all right, are we both doing what we've set out to do since the beginning of this arrangement? And I don't just look at that company and thinking, all right, what are they doing for me? That is a big portion of it. But I also think to myself, am I doing all the things that I set out to do? Because if the relationship is one-sided, then it makes it pretty easy. If I am doing a lot of work and I'm putting my heart, my soul, my thought process, my experience, if I'm putting that to work and it's not getting recognized, reciprocated, or, you know, valued, then that makes it pretty easy for me to move on and, you know, start a new contract with somebody else. Vice versa. If a company is really focused on putting out a great quality product, they are ethical, they are inclusive, and they are really focused on their people as the most important asset, that to me feeds me, I've got to make sure that I'm doing damn well by this company then, because if they're putting this much time, money, effort into making sure that their employees are well taken care of, that they are valued, I need to make sure that I continue to provide top quality value, because those are the things that I appreciate. When I am looking at a company and I'm thinking about what things they have to offer and stuff, and I am just kind of like passively looking, I think about it and that's cool, and I'll put them on my list. Like, hey, maybe take a look at this company in the future. But when I move into active pursuing, that's when things change. And this is another bit of advice I have for folks, is that a kind of passive laissez-faire approach to applying for jobs can work if your definition of active pursuing is more like, well, I want to look for a new job, but I'm in no rush yet. That's a great place to be in. I don't really know anyone who's ever been in that. For me, active pursuing has always been, okay, there's been enough triggers, enough red flags that have been activated. It tells me that this is not a good situation anymore, and I am in desperate need of moving on because of some combination of situations that tells me, like, if I stay here any much more longer, I'm going to atrophy my skills, I'm going to be less relevant, or my days just might be numbered because I might not be there. My department might not be there. So for me, active pursuing means you are actively applying for, researching, and following up with companies. To me, that is not something you take lightly. That is not something that you kind of dawdle with. Getting a full-time job is a full-time job. And it sucks. It's draining. It can be super uncomfortable. And I think, again, draining is probably the most apt word here, because you are pouring so much of yourself into potential futures that is really concerning, especially if you're in that anxiety kind of induced actively pursuing type of mentality. Now, again, you may be actively pursuing, but you're not in the, like, oh shit moment, I have to get out of here kind of a thing. I have never run across that myself. I have never run across the person or anyone that I know, or have I ever been in the situation where, like, okay, I'm actively pursuing. I am in no rush, but I'm going to continue to be looking for other jobs and moving on. And I don't really know what that's like. I really don't. So I don't know. Maybe I put too much pressure on myself. But when I hear other folks, you know, say that, well, I want to get a new job and I'm really actively pursuing, I need to get out of there, or like, I don't have a job right now. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, what's your plan of attack for everything? I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess I got to dust off my LinkedIn. I got to dust off my resume. I got to update my portfolio. And for me, I'm thinking, like, these are things that you should have been doing anyways, whether you were looking for a job actively, whether you were passively looking, or you weren't looking at all. Like, you should be always updating those things. They are all living documents. Because if you are then in the position where you're looking for a new job, now you have to go through and update all of these things all the time. And you're spending a lot of time there. And that is inducing anxiety, because now you're having to spend the prep time to make sure your resume is up to date, make sure your cover letters are up to date, make sure that your portfolio site's up to date, make sure your GitHub's up to date, make sure all these different things are up to date. And during that, you're like, I might be losing opportunity here. Like, I should be applying for jobs, but I need to get all this other stuff done. So that's why it's important to keep those living documents updated, regardless of where you're at in your job search. That brings me to another part of this whole experience, is that a lot of friends of mine who are moving from, like, one side of design to another, a classic example of this is the graphic designer who now wants to become a UX designer. You know, those two jobs aren't the same. Like, they don't do the same things. What's interesting is that they'll be looking for jobs and they're like, I don't know, what's this UX designer? What's this service designer thing? And I'm like, it's a discipline inside the wider design discipline, and they do this. They work on this. And this is the type of problems they solve. And this goes back to, like, you know, not looking at stuff, but this kind of delves into a more deeper issue of not keeping up with the latest industry news. Now, I'm not saying that you need to be up to date on all the latest trends and be using them for the sake of those trends, but just being aware of, like, what people are talking about. Because you can either say, oh, this is something that this trend makes sense and this is where the industry's going, this is a good direction, or you can be like, yeah, this is bullshit. This is just the new term of the day, the new buzzword. A great example is design thinking. I love human-centered design. I hate design thinking because a lot of people use it and say that they're using it. It's just becoming a buzzword that I feel like people really don't understand. But when I talk about human-centered design, like, what that is, I mean, I might be splitting hairs here on, you know, you say tomato, I say tomato, something like that, but it's a trend. I've seen it. I've seen a lot of people using it, and I think a lot of people who are saying design thinking are kind of bullshit. However, those who really understand it, understand how it's utilized and its power, absolutely makes sense. If you don't keep up with the industry at all. Like, you wouldn't even know any of that. By large in part, then, you wouldn't know, like, what jobs that are going to be available. So this goes back to a thing where I talked about getting, you know, getting a job with no experience, is that once you're working, you can't 100% rely on the company that you work for to be the people that educate you and continue you to grow. You need to take that responsibility on yourself. I had that dedicated page of LinkedIn Learning certifications and course completions. I did all of those myself. Like, those are all courses that I did outside of work. That helped me grow. And if I would have thought, okay, you know, the company I'm going to be working for, well, they're going to give me all the training and the stuff that I need to continue to grow. Yeah, some companies definitely do that, and other companies don't. And you shouldn't have the expectation that every place is going to prepare you for your next job. So you need to constantly be aware of the industry. You need to understand where the industry is going, where certain jobs are going to, how jobs are moving around, types of disciplines inside of the industry that are starting to form, and not sit and complain and rest on your laurels. Because that's something that I have really noticed, is that, oh, I'm looking for a new job, and all these jobs want this experience or that experience. And I think that's dumb. I have got so much more experience than this. I don't think they know what they're looking for. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fair to an extent, but you also need to be able to be selling yourself. And if you put the wrong foot forward, I mean, why should someone hire you then? This is tough. I understand it's the mentality that some people have, but at the same time too, you have to take responsibility. So for me, I have done those things. I've definitely screwed up a lot of job opportunities by over-applying or applying the wrong skills to the stuff, and having a blanket, bland cover letter and a resume that really doesn't fit for the job. I've learned from those mistakes, and I've applied the learnings from that into having more of a templatized approach that I can then customize and make unique, having a system in place to be able to track where I am at with certain companies, and having my documents living so that I can constantly update them as I go about, and having a good plan of attack for applying. Because the other portion to this is, yeah, looking for jobs online, that's great. Also reaching out to your network and, you know, finding out from people, like, if they are familiar with any opportunities, like where certain things are going, so that they keep you on the top of their mind when something does come up, they can share something with you. Something you may not even ever find online. Those are the tactics, some of the strategies that I use to help me find a new gig, you know, move on, potentially move up. Because the other thing that I run into is that a lot of people want to move up in their career, but the company that they're currently working at doesn't really have that kind of a structure set up. Maybe they don't have extra levels. Maybe you're chasing a title for something. Maybe you want to move more into management and they really don't need that, have a need for that, have that set up. So that's why another reason why you might want to move on from your current role to another role is more opportunities for growth. It's fine. You might be in the position then to be actively pursuing, but you're in no rush. That's fine. But you have to make sure that you're doing your prep work and your foundational work correctly. And so that's why I'm a little bit salty around folks that don't do these basic things and are now like in kind of dire straits. With companies changing so much, with the industries changing so much, with the massive amount of uncertainty that is facing everybody right now, there's a lot of things going on, all that uncertainty. The last thing you want to be doing is worrying about and inducing more anxiety in yourself, like, oh, I make sure all this stuff is updating. Yes, and also no. You should be using that anxiety to make sure that you're taking care of yourself there as well. So, as industries are changing, as companies are changing and are starting to hire more again for, you know, knowledge worker type work, and starting to hire more and starting to figure out like what their futures are going to be a little bit more, I want to make sure that people are setting themselves up correctly. And I would assume that in a larger metropolitan area that has more of those companies, and when you're living in South Central Pennsylvania and you work in an industry that's not really well represented or well known here, you need to make sure that you're protecting yourself so that in case something does happen, you're in a position where, like, I need to make a change, you're setting yourself up to be able to make sure that you do that easily. Because really, getting a new job, switching jobs, moving into something new is not something that you enter into like half-assed. You have to really be focused and dedicated on how to do it and do it well so that you can make good informed decisions about where you want to move to next. The greatest situation you can be in is when you have multiple offers and you are in the position to figure out where you want to take your career. That's where you really want to be at. You don't want to be in the position where, oh, I'm just going to take the first job offer that is afforded to me, because you might be going right back into that cycle. Anyways, I am incredibly conscientious about what's going on right now with people's jobs. Very understanding. One of the last things I did in my last gig was help to work on the unemployment website for the state. And a lot of people are going through a lot of really difficult times right now. So I am conscientious of all of this. And a lot of circumstances are outside of people's ability to control. But you can take some control back for yourself by doing the prep work, doing the foundational work, make sure that in case something does happen, you have the artifacts, the skills, you have everything you need to start looking for a new place sooner and more easily rather than later and more difficult. This is a long-winded way of saying that shit's real right now. It's difficult, and I hope that you find some of the strategies and tactics that I've shared in this episode with you to be helpful. Whether you live in a rural area or not, hopefully something from this episode rings true with you and you can start implementing that for your own job searches. With that, I want to thank everyone again for always joining me on these episodes. I'm starting to get more of a regular cadence for everything, and I really appreciate all of my listeners who have shared topics with me on Twitter, who have shared topics with me on LinkedIn, and have given me some really good feedback on how to make the show even more successful. So thank you, everyone. Once again, everything that I share here is purely from my viewpoint, my experience. It is not indicative of the company that I work for, past or current. It's all my own observations and my own pseudo-subjective, objective views on things. Thank you, everyone. I hope you have a great day.